I love that song, but it is so hard for me to sing it. Tonight, we want to conclude our study together the subject of gambling, the vice of the 21st century. This morning, we tried to lay out the foundation of why gambling is covetousness and why that it is sin, because it violates the principles established by God for the legitimate means of making money and getting gain. And one of the things I tried to stress this morning in our classes, in our worship service, was that there is a difference between a risk and a chance. Gambling is based on chance. It doesn't take any skill. It's based on chance. Now, you'll have people that will debate that with you, like poker players. They'll debate whether there's skill. I guess there's a little skill, know when to bluff, when not to bluff. But it's an unexpected event. There's an event that is uncertain. There's no certainty about it. And remember the three things that are elements that must be involved when we're talking about gambling. There has to be an uncertain event, there has to be a wager, and there has to be a winner, and there has to be a loser. And those elements is what makes gambling covetousness. And that's what makes it sinful. Tonight we want to finish up this study by looking at some principles and then some other things that make gambling an activity that we should shy away from. First of all, it violates the principle of stewardship. Children of God are to be responsible before God in how we invest the resources that God has given us. I want to begin tonight by looking at a passage that we often read, but I wonder if we truly understand its meaning. Turn to James chapter 1 and look at verse number 17. James chapter 1 and verse number 17. It says, Every good gift and every perfect gift is from above, comes down from the Father of lights, whom with there is no variance or shadow of turning. Now that just simply tells us that every good gift that we received in life is a blessing directly that involves God. And we are given those gifts in order to be entrusted with the manner in which we use them, and that's called management or stewardship. Now good stewards will always be blessed. In verse 42 and 43, I'll be so glad when I get my old Bible back. 42 and 43. And the Lord said, who then is a faithful and wise steward, whom his master will make ruler over his master's household, to give them their portion of food in due season? Blessed is that servant whom his master will find so doing when he comes. A faithful steward is one that God is going to bless. We're told in 1 Peter chapter 4 and verse 10 and 11 that the things that we do, we are to glorify God. But I want you to look at 1 Corinthians chapter 4 because this gives us a blanket statement in what God requires of all of us who are stewards. In 1 Corinthians chapter 4 verses 1 and 2, the Bible says, let a man so consider us as servants of Christ and stewards of the mysteries of God. Moreover, it is required in stewards that one be found faithful. Now, we have to be a faithful steward. You're not a faithful steward if you abuse or misuse the gifts that God has blessed you with. If you use them in order to gain money or goods in an unauthorized way, then you haven't been a good steward. You haven't been faithful in the things that God has blessed you with. I could tell you many horror stories of families, businesses, marriages, and all kinds of things that have happened because somebody started to gamble and couldn't stop. And it destroyed every good thing in their life. But I'm telling you, nobody, I want you to listen to me very carefully, nobody believes it can happen to them. The drunkard doesn't believe he'll ever become a drunkard. The person that dabbles in drugs never believes he'll become an addict. And the person that lays a bet down on a table or buys a lottery ticket or plays poker never believe that he will become an addictive gambler. Nobody believes that. Nobody starts out to do that. It just takes over you. It just comes over you and it consumes your life. And that's the danger of it. And so to be a good, faithful steward, we must use God's blessings in the right way. Another thing that makes gambling wrong is it violates the golden rule. For one to win gambling, others must lose. Ladies and gentlemen, this is a principle that I don't believe men get. Somebody's got to lose. Everybody can't be a winner. Somebody's got to lose in order for somebody to win. That's true in every gambling situation, whether we're talking about cards, whether we're talking about blackjack, whether we're talking about poker, whether we're talking about lottery tickets, somebody's got to lose. Somebody has to lose in order for somebody else to win. Now, gambling is predicated on the losses, the pain, and the suffering of others. Gambling preys on the desperation of the poor. A Christian is not to take advantage of another person. Now, brother, how many times has the Bible told us that? Now, you know this passage very well, Matthew 7 and verse 12. It says, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Do you want anybody to rob you? Do you want anybody to take your hard-earned money away from you? Do you want anybody to misuse the things that you've worked all your life for and to take them away from you? You don't want anybody to do that. And if you don't want anybody to do that, then you should not ever be put in the position that you do that to someone else. Philippians chapter 2 verse 4 says that we ought to esteem others better than ourselves. We don't esteem somebody better than ourselves if we take from him so we can have more. We're not demonstrating that. Now look at Proverbs chapter 14 and look at verse number 31. Proverbs chapter 14 and verse number 31. He who oppresses the poor reproaches his maker, but he who honors him has mercy on the needy. Notice what it says. He that oppresses the poor, he reproaches his maker. That means God. And all of these passages demonstrate that we are not to take advantage of another person. And we are not to take from them that which belongs to them and does not belong to us. That is violating the principle of the golden rule. And that's another reason that gambling is wrong. I don't know how many of you have seen this symbol that I'm about to put up. But if you go to this website, you can see it. It's the website of the Gamblers Anonymous. And this is another place that you can go for information about gambling. And it's very enlightening because they give you a lot of information. Now, here's the problem of gambling. It can result in intemperance. The existence of Gamblers Anonymous applies that gambling can be addictive. Now, brethren, if it couldn't be addictive, why do they have Gamblers Anonymous? And it's 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 12, it says all things may be lawful, but not all things are profitable. Now, in Las Vegas, it's legal to gamble. Does that mean it's okay since it's legal? If you go down to a couple of counties, prostitution is legal. Is that okay since it's legal? No, making it legal doesn't make it right. And in 2 Timothy chapter 1 and verse 6, you're talking about the Christian graces. We're to add temperance. A person doesn't have temperance that has an addictive habit. Now listen to what Gamblers Anonymous says. The number of Gamblers Anonymous chapters has grown rapidly. In 1960, there were 16 chapters in the U.S. 16 chapters in all of the United States in 1960. In 1970, 10 years later, it grew to 130. In 1988, there are 600 chapters that exist in our country. And today in the 21st century, they are in every major city and every town in our country and even internationally in all the major cities. Brethren, it is a problem. It is a problem. And it is a problem because it's addictive behavior. And we cannot allow ourselves to get involved with addictive behavior. Here's what Gamblers Anonymous says. It's estimated that approximately 2.5 5 million people as pathological gamblers, another 3 million as problem gamblers, and another 15 million people at risk to become problem or pathological gamblers. Now you add that all together, that's almost 20 million people. 20 million people have a problem with gambling. That's a lot of people. Gambling Impact Study Commission gave these statistics in their final report in January 28, 2001, and I'm sure it is even higher today. Now, again, I know the argument. I've heard them all my life. Well, it might not happen to me. It might not happen to me. That happens to other people. It won't happen to me. I just gamble when I can afford to lose. I love people that tell me that. They just gamble what they can afford to lose. Well, you never stay with what you can afford to lose. And let me give you something to think about. What about your example? Does it do anything to your example? In Proverbs chapter 22 and verse number 1, the Bible says something about a good name. In Proverbs chapter 22, in verse number 1, the proverb writes, a good name is to be chosen rather than great riches, loving favor rather than silver and gold. If you're a gambler, it destroys your good name. It destroys your reputation. And it can lead others into sin. Jesus warned this about little children. It'd be better to have your millstone around your neck than to lead a little one of these into sin. Romans chapter 14, verse 13, we're not to put a stumbling block in the path of our brother. In 1 Corinthians chapter 8, verse 13, we're not to use our liberty in such a way that we would cause another to sin. And it destroys your own influence. We're to be a light shining on a community. And in Philippians chapter 2, we're to be a light in a crooked and perverse generation. Let me give you an example of what I'm talking about. I preached a lesson some years ago, when I first started preaching on this subject in Las Vegas, about that it destroys your influence. I had one of my sisters there who took great exception with that. She thought that I was a little bit too hard. So about 3 months later, she was in a bowling alley. Her son was bowling. And while he was bowling, she was playing the video poker machines that were behind, by the bowling alley, behind where the people were bowling. She got up to get some change, and lo and behold, her neighbor was sitting across that she didn't see. And she looked at her and said, "Man, what are you doing here?" And she said, "What do you mean?" She said, "I thought you were Christian." How does the world understand it, but we don't? Another situation, fellow was getting some gas one day. He went into the gas station, the 7-Eleven, where he got some gas, and he was going to pay his gas. And lo and behold, one of the members said they're pulling the machines on one of the video machines. And he says, "You've been following me." There's 1,500 of those in Las Vegas. He wasn't following him. And if he was doing anything wrong, why would he be ashamed for his brother to see him sitting there playing? If he's not doing anything wrong. But let me tell you one other story. I was sitting in my office one day in Las Vegas. I was doing some studying, and the phone rang. And it was a man on the other end. And he's crying, and he's crying pretty uncontrollably, and I'm trying to calm him down to try to find out what his problem is. He said, "Brother Greer, you don't know me. I'm a Christian from Texas, and I won a 3-day vacation here through my business to come out here to Las Vegas. I won a contest that they were having in the business that I own, and what they did is gave me a three-day round-trip airfare and hotel accommodation for me and my family to come out here for 3 days. And I've never been here before." And he says, we checked into the hotel, and they gave us some quarters when we checked in. And I just went down. I never gambled. I never thought about gambling. And I put it in, and I put it in, and I won. And so I put those back in, and I put some more back in. And he says, "I was just about to cash in my airplane tickets when my little boy pulled on my coat and says, "Daddy, can we go home now?" He said, "What a horrible example I just set for my children." He says, "I never thought this could happen to me." He says, "I've not only sinned in the sight of God, I've sinned in the sight of my family. I've been a horrible example to my children. I've been a horrible example to my wife. And I was about to cash my tickets in how we were going to get home in order to feed that machine." He said, "Will you pray for me that God will forgive me?" I said, "Yes, I'll pray for you." So we prayed on the phone, and he's still crying. The whole time I'm praying, he's crying. And when he's done, he said, "Brother Greer, what can I do?" I said, "You go home and you tell people what happened to you. Because it can happen to anyone. You ask any gambler, you ask any drinker or drug addict, where was your first mistake?" I've talked to drug addicts. I've talked to those who have been addicted to alcohol. I've talked to those who've been addicted to gambling. I've talked to those who've been addicted to pornography. And in every scenario, the answer is the same. The mistake I made was the first drink, the first drug, the first pornographic site I went to, and the first bet I ever made. Because here's the key. If you never start, you can't be hooked. And don't think that it can't happen. "Well, I'm a smart person. I'm an intelligent person. I know when to quit." Gamblers Anonymous are full of people who thought that. It destroys your influence. And we are to have a good influence in the world. And if we're addicted to gambling, we're not a good influence. Another thing that gambling does, it breeds sin. You know, Matthew 7 and verse 20, it says, "By their fruits you should know them." You associate with the works of the flesh, that's what you're going to reap. We're not to have anything to do with the works of the flesh. Family problems, child abuse, spousal abuse and divorce. Suicide, general population 1.1. Suicide among Gamblers Anonymous 13%. Now you look at those figures. 1 in the general population, 13 among addicted gamblers. General crime, organized crime in gaming areas. That was true years ago and is still true to some degree. Check forgery, prostitution, tax evasion, embezzlement, illegal drugs, drunkenness, robberies, and other credit card forgeries. For what? To get money to make another bet. You see, what the gambler's problem is, he's got to cut his losses. And how he cuts his losses is he hits it big. And then he can cover all of his losses. But when he keeps trying to get even, he gets farther behind. And then that causes him to step over the line and go into things that not only are sinful, they are illegal. When I was in Las Vegas, I worked in a top secret assignment. One of the things that they did in my particular job is that every year I got a clothing allowance to buy because I didn't wear my uniform. I had to blend in with the general population of people I was working with. And so I got a clothing allowance that came right from finance. It would go into my pay. Well, we had a member of the church in the first church that I attended when I was there that worked in finance, in the finance department. And he developed a gambling habit, and his wife got a drug habit. Now, how he fed his habits is he began to use the codes in his job to funnel the money out of the account that it was supposed to go to and into his bank account. And he did that for about 6 months. And then he got caught. You know what was the cause of that? Gambling. To feed his gambling addiction. You know what resulted from that? He lost his military career. He was put in Leavenworth Prison for 15 years. His children were put into an orphan's home. His marriage was destroyed. He got a dishonorable discharge. He spent 15 years in jail. But he didn't think it happened to him. It's the nature of the beast. You start walking down this road, it bleeds into other things. And so that's why you stay away from it. But you want the number one reason Besides, it is sinful that you ought to stay away from this behavior. It destroys family. Listen to this statement that I pulled off the internet the other day. The tragedy of gambling addiction reaches far beyond more than 15 million Americans who are problem and pathological gamblers. Employers, work associates, friends, taxpayers often pay a steep price as well. However, the family members who bear the brunt of the pain and the misery that accompanies this addiction, in addition to material deprivation, family members frequently experience the trauma of divorce, child abuse, neglect, and domestic violence. You know why? They spend every dime they have to gamble. They take away from their children. They let their house go into foreclosure. They take food away from their kids. They destroy their home. They destroy their reputation. They destroy their families. All to make a bet to get something for nothing. But you know what? Every addicting behavior does that. Alcohol, drugs, pornography, it all ends the same. It all ends the same. It's addictive behavior. It destroys family. 650 additional divorces were granted in Harrison County the year after the casinos arrived in Missouri. Longtime Gulf Coast Chancery Court Judge William L. Stewart said, gambling is now a factor in at least a third of the divorce cases that he oversees. A third. Because of gambling. You know, whenever I put these statistics up, and I put these statements up, he goes, well, that's when it goes bad. Well, how many times do they have to go bad to show there's something wrong with it? How many times does it have to destroy a family? How many times does it have to destroy a life? How many times does it lead somebody to take his life till we wake up that it's something we need not to have anything to do with? Brethren, it's not something, it's an innocent sin. I know brethren that think this is an innocent sin. It's not an innocent sin. It's a sin that will cost your soul in hell, and it's a sin that could destroy your life. Don't tell me what's innocent about that. Nothing innocent about it. The National Gambling Impact Study Commission reported, children of compulsive gamblers are often prone to suffer abuse as well as neglect as a result of parental problems or pathological gambling. In Indiana, 72 children were found abandoned on casino premises during a 14-month period. And you know when that was? When they put the riverboats in. What a sham. A riverboat? You know what a riverboat is? It's a patch of water that has a dock that has a string on it tied to a boat. That makes it riverboat gambling, and that makes it legal. They introduced them in Indiana a number of years ago, about 25 years ago. And Indiana's had nothing but problems since they built them. In Louisiana, South Carolina, children died after being locked in hot cars for hours while their caretakers gambled. An Illinois mother was sentenced to prison for suffocating her infant daughter in order to collect the insurance money in order to continue gambling. And here's one that I know about personally. In Nevada, when we agreed to live there, there was a child taken away from the casino's kids' arcade and killed. Her mother was busy playing in the slots until 4 in the morning. She had sent him to play in the kids' arcade and left him there for over 6 hours until she was done playing. He was right outside of Las Vegas. And a guy took him out of there. Took him out in the back and murdered him. The child was 9 years old. And sent him to the kitty arcade so she could play. You know, in my opinion, she's guilty of manslaughter. She is an accomplice to that crime. Brethren, don't tell me that gambling doesn't hurt anybody. I'm not a person that buys that bill of goods. And I'll tell you something else gambling does. It associates with the wrong kind of people. Gambling establishments are a host of other corrupting vices, including prostitution and drunkenness. Christians are to avoid such circumstances. We're to avoid all appearance of evil. 1 Corinthians 15, the Bible says, evil companions corrupt good morals. And supports an immoral predatory and exploitative industry instead of partaking of that which we are to expose. We are to expose the sinner. We're not to partake with them. Let me tell you about this associated with evil companions. Do you know when you gamble in Las Vegas, you get free drinks? I wonder why they do that. And you know what? If you go into a casino, there's no clocks anywhere. You know why? They don't want you to know what time it is. Free liquor. They even give you free food. They'll give you vouchers to go to the restaurants and the casinos as long as you continue to play. People say, wow, that's great. It is? Why do they do that? Common sense, folks. Common sense. Now, you know, people think about Vegas, and I've heard this all, Sin City, you know, Sodom and Gomorrah, the modern history. I mean, I've heard all that. But yeah, I'm going to tell you, everything that we have in Vegas, you got right here in Kentucky. And you got it in every state that's in the Union. And you know why? Because we got the lottery. And the lottery is just as bad as a casino gambling. It's an uncertain event that is arbitrarily determined. Wager or bet is deliberately chance, and a winner or loser is a possession wage while the winner takes it from him. Have you seen the new commercials on TV about the Kentucky Lottery? How people pick their numbers? One has a little bitty, one has dogs that have, they have races with little bitty dogs, and they have numbers on them. Whoever wins the race, they race four times, and whoever wins, they choose those numbers to use their four, pick four numbers. Everybody thinks it's a cute commercial. Well, you remember the marathon commercials they have on TV where a guy goes in there and they're arguing about what numbers to pick? And they're all wearing shirts with numbers on them. And he tells her, and the lady behind the counter says, hey, Robert, come out here. And he jumps out there with a mirror. Oh, we'll pick these numbers. And they make a joke out of it. Brethren, it's not funny. It's not funny. It's as much a sin as it is going to the casino. But look at the good we can do. Should we do evil, that good may come? That's what Romans 3. Romans 3 asks this. I don't care if they give $100 million to the education fund. I don't care if it paves every road out there that's cracked. The ends don't justify the means. Because some good comes from it doesn't mean what's wrong will be made right. How do we? How are American people so how blinded to think because some arbitrary good is done that justifies bad behavior? That's ridiculous. Lottery fits the count. Now, again, I want to apologize to Linda. I'm not picking on Arkansas, but that was the last one to organize state gambling. But this is amazing to me. I want you to look at what I pulled off the internet. Arkansas Lottery Director is the third highest paid package among 44 state lottery chiefs. Arkansas Lottery Director Ernie Passelet has the third highest paid package among the nation's 44 state lottery directors. The Arkansas Democrat Gazette surveyed the compensation of state lottery directors and found that only Georgia and Tennessee paid their lottery administrators more than Passelet's $324,000 a year. Now, who's paying that? The taxpayers of Arkansas are paying that. And every gambler that doesn't win is paying his salary. But if you think that's not bad, he had an ideal. Listen to what he says. The incoming director of the Arkansas Lottery says he wants to hire two vice presidents to help run the games and pay each of them at least $200,000 annually. Told members of the Lottery Commission Friday that he'd like to create a vice president of games and a vice president of the administration. That's $400,000 more in salary. Who's paying it? The taxpayers paying it. And the people that play the lottery that don't win. Now let me ask you a common sense question. Is it a money-making venture? How could you pay $750,000 in salaries of three individuals if lottery wasn't profitable. How could you do that? You know what that says? There's a lot of people in Arkansas that need to start thinking. But not just Arkansas, and a lot of other states. Because every one of them have these directors. Every state has a gaming director. Now, what about the lottery? Here's what the commissioner said. In my view, state lotteries have paved the way for great increases in legalized gambling. They have promoted the notion of beating the odds. They have been able to advertise while others have not. And they have propagated the myth that gambling is good for society in general and the government in particular. Lotteries are perhaps the hardest form of gambling to justify in terms of their cost and benefit. The best studies all point to the same direction. Lotteries prey on the poor and the uneducated. Why? Because they think they can get something for nothing. Now, brethren, a number of years ago, we took off advertising of cigarettes on TV because it was determined to be unhealthy. Why we still got beer commercials, as funny as they are, I don't know. That's just as dangerous as the cigarettes are. But you know, we got lottery advertisement and lottery commercials all over the place. You know why? Because people think it's entertainment. It's nothing more than a form of entertainment. It's a lie. It's a lie, and it's a legalized lie. Now, lottery tickets are just as much sinful as going down to the casino and playing blackjack or playing or playing the casinos. Now, somebody asked me, have you ever had, you know, Christmas parties at work? People buy you a gift, they give you a lottery ticket. What do you do with it? You know what, if somebody gave me a lottery ticket, I'd know I'd win. Then how in the world would I go cash it in? No, brother, you can't do that. You can't do it. It's sinful. It's sinful. You can't have any business in it. Now, let me hit one closer to home. What about raffle tickets? Now, are these three things present? Is it an uncertain event? Yes. Got to draw a name. Is there a stake? You got to buy a ticket. Is there a winner and loser? Everybody that buys the ticket doesn't win. All the elements are there. Here's a question. Are we training our children that gambling is a legitimate means of raising money by selling raffle tickets to raise money for social events and organizations? There's a lot of school organizations that sell raffle tickets in order to pay for their organization. Brethren, what are we teaching the children? What precedents are we setting? I'm all for helping schools. I'm all for buying things to help school buy computers. But I don't want to have a raffle to do it. As I told you this morning, I might give to a good cause, but I'll never take a raffle ticket. Because I don't want to encourage that behavior because I think it's sinful. A number of years ago, there was a gospel preacher in North Carolina that wrote an article in one of the periodicals on gambling. And it was a really good article until the last paragraph. And in the last paragraph, he says, now, raffles and things like that, those are really not gambling. So the editor of this paper, where I lived in Las Vegas, calls me. He says, hey, Keith, did you read that article about gambling by this brother? I said, yeah, I read it. He said, what did you think about it? He said, well, I thought it was a good article until his last paragraph. I thought he shot himself in the foot with what he said in the last paragraph. He says, well, would you write an article and would you answer and show the erroneous position he has? I said, no, but I'll tell you what I'll do. Give me his number and I'll call him and see if he'll print a retraction. So he gave me his number. I called him one day, told him who I was. And I said, I read your article about gambling. I thought it was a good article, except your last statement. And I had the article in front of me, and I quoted his statement. I said, brother, what element of gambling is not in the raffle, in the raffle ticket? What about the raffle ticket is any different than the other things that you condemned in the article? And I asked him about these three things. He thought about it for a minute. He said, you know what, Keith? You're absolutely right. I'm being inconsistent. The next month, he printed a retraction. And he printed a retraction that he was wrong because all the elements that made the casino gambling wrong and made lotteries wrong was the same thing that made having a raffle ticket wrong. You know, brethren, it's not the amount of money. You remember what we talked about this morning? It's not about what you wager. It's not about whether you can afford to lose. That's not the issue. The issue is it gambling? Is it an uncertain state? Is it an uncertain event? Is it chance? Is there a stake? Is there a winner? Is there a loser? If you have all those present, that's gambling. I don't care if you're talking about pennies, quarters, dollars, or $1,000. It's all gambling. Now, how simple is it for us to get sucked into this? I grew up my life. My grandmother played bingo every Friday night. I used to go to the state fair and play bingo. And I tell you what else I used to do. I don't know how many of you, I'm going to tell my age here a little bit, but we used to have a county fair every year. And in that county fair, they had these little cubicles with cranes. And they had a little hook on them. And you could take the crane and you drop it in there, and whatever you picked up, you won that. And it cost a dime. And you know, I got pretty good at that. And you know, I used to go there and people would give me their dimes and I'd clean those machines up. I'd go from one to the other, clean them out. Finally, the guy paid me $5 to go away. But you know what? I never thought that was gambling. I thought that was just entertainment. No, brethren, that's gambling. It's an uncertain amount. I pay the money. There's no guarantee I'm going to hook that thing at the bottom of that. How many of us have taken our kids to these restaurants to have those great big things in there with all those stuffed animals, and we put our quarters in and we try to win them a little stuffed animal? What are we doing? What are we doing? We're doing gambling. We're gambling. You mean we're gambling over a stuffed animal? It's gambling. It's gambling, brethren. Here's what I'm telling you. If you're going to oppose gambling, you can't participate in it. It makes you inconsistent. You say it's harmless, Keith. You remember what I told you this morning about the change that the Vegas casinos have made, where they got arcades now in the basement for the kids to play while the big boys are upstairs playing the big tables? What are they doing? Is that a conscience thing you're doing? Yes. What are they doing? They're training those young minds. To do what? To see that there's nothing wrong with laying down money for a bet. They're looking for future customers. Brethren, who knows whether they can ever be addicted? Do you know, as you're sitting here tonight, that gambling could never addict you? Drugs, alcohol, pornography. Do you think you're above all that, and you're a strong Christian, and none of that could ever reach you? You ever said, well, that would never happen to me? You better be careful what you say will never happen to you. You know why? Because you don't know what happens until it happens. And you don't know how you'll react until you're in that situation. But you know what? God gave us good advice. He says, abstain from all appearance of evil. Does gambling fit an appearance of evil? Yes. In every way, it is an appearance of evil. And so, in conclusion tonight, gambling is not harmless entertainment. I had a fella who used to be in Elder Lord's church says, I gamble for entertainment. I don't care if I lose. Really? I said, well, when you win, do you give it back? He says, do you think I was born yesterday? No, I don't give it back. Why? Because that's not why he plays. He plays to win. People gamble to win. They don't do it for entertainment. That's a dodge. The greed-driven predatory buys, scientifically designed to squeeze the maximum amount of money possible from every single patriot. Now, brethren, in Las Vegas, they got 80 casinos. How did they build them? They didn't build them with people that won. They built them with millions of people that came there and lost. That's the way it works. That's the way state lotteries work. Brethren, how could a state lottery give away an $80 million jackpot? You couldn't do it unless you took in more than $80 million. Couldn't you? And by the way, we all heard the horror stories about men and women who've won those state lotteries and what it's done to their life. And if you don't want to doubt, just look it up on the internet about men and women who have won the lottery and how, oh, it changed their life. No doubt about that. But it wasn't for a positive thing. It is very nature and enterprise wholly dependent on victims. Now, brethren, James Dobson set a mouthful. It's wholly dependent on victims. The victim of the ones involved and the victims are the ones who are loved and are attached to the one that gets addicted. It's nothing but a victim-driven enterprise. The spread of legalized gambling is exacting colossal society and economical cost. Gambling expansion brings with it increased crime, divorce, family disruption, and creates a multitude of new addicts. And brethren, you know what you need to do? You need to go out and look at the state. The states that have legalized gambling in the last 10 years. Go look at the statistics of the divorce rate, of the crime rate, and the suicide rate before they introduced gambling. And look at it 5 years later. And you know what you will find in every case? In every case, all three, divorces, suicides, and crime, have all risen double digits. Is that just a coincidence? Is it? I had an elder in the church in California say, oh, that's just a coincidence, Keith. No, that's not a coincidence. That's the nature of the beast. Gambling also exploits the poor and the youth. Legalized gambling is harmful public policy that should be vigorously opposed at all levels. Every time when I lived in the house next to the church when I was in Ohio, and every year one of the restaurants tried to pass a law that they could sell alcohol on Sunday. Every time they came, I voted against it. Every time they came to my door, I started to petition to vote against it. I'm just one person, but I can let my voice be heard. Brethren, we need to understand that there's a reason why God said, abstain from the appearance of evil. If there wasn't any wrong in it, then there would be no danger in it. I leave you with this set of verses. Here's what God said about it. For the grace of God that brings salvation has appeared to all men, teaching us that we must deny ungodliness and worldly lust, that we should live soberly, righteously, and godly in the present age. You don't live godly if you gamble. Gambling and Christianity are not compatible. Drinking and Christianity are not compatible. Any addictive behavior that leaves us with something else being the thing that makes the decision of what we do in our life is not compatible with Christianity. In a few months, I'll talk about drinking. And I'm going to ask the question, does one drink make a difference? Today, in the Lord's church, we have a problem with social drinking. People think it's okay to drink in the privacy of your home. It's okay to have wine with your dinner. It's okay to have a glass of wine when you go out to eat. It's okay to have a champagne toast on a special occasion. And they put it all under the scheme of social drinking. Well, we're going to talk about that. Does the Bible talk about that? Yeah, the Bible talks about that. And you know what? Just because you do it in the privacy of your own home doesn't mean that God doesn't see it. Hebrews 4:13 says, everything we do is open unto him whom we should give an account. Brethren, if you would have ever told me, 10 years ago, that some of the greatest heat that I would take from my brethren were lessons that I gave on gambling, drinking, and dancing, and immodest apparel, I would have laughed at you. I ain't laughing no more. I have taken grief from brethren on all of those subjects in different places that I preached and held meetings on the subject of social drinking, of gambling, immodest apparel, and dancing. Now, ladies and gentlemen, has it happened, what happened to Israel? Israel was given the opportunity of being an influence in the world to teach the world about who God was. But what happened to Israel? Instead of the influence of God's people rubbing off on the world, their influence rubbed off on them. Are we repeating the same mistake that was made in days of old? Are we allowing the world to set the right and the wrong and the standard? And are we allowing the world to influence us instead of us seeking to influence the world? You know how it ended for Israel. Do you think it will end any different for us? No, brethren, it won't. It'll have a catastrophe, and it will have grievous, grievous consequences. If you have any questions about this subject, I'd be more than happy to talk to you about it. I spent a great deal of time. I've had discussions with elders. I've had discussions with preachers. And I've heard every excuse under the sun why I could justify gambling. And I got an answer for any of them. Because it's not difficult. If I want to live godly, it's not compatible with Christianity. And it must be opposed. Thank you for your kind attention. We don't want to close this service without giving you an opportunity to render obedience to the gospel. Or, if you're here and your life's not right, you need to make some changes. We pray with you and for you. And if there's anything we can do in order to help you make your life right with God tonight, we bid you to support us together. We stand together.